This is Kara from the Pure Rock Shop, and I've got Chris Caffrey from Spirits of Fire on the line to discuss his band's sophomore album. Hey, Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Kara. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. My voice is a little raw from Monsters of Rock Cruise, so I'll let you do most of the talking today.
Yeah, that's fine. I it's funny because I see that you just got off the ship or the boat. I laugh because if you're on most cruises, if you say the word boat, everybody that has any kind of nautical knowledge usually gets angry saying that it's a ship, not a boat. But it seems that Monsters of Rock wants to have every single person say it's a boat. I mean, technically, I think you can say it's a boat, but I think that realistically, people always say that a boat is something that a ship is able to carry. So those little life rafts on the side of the ship or boats, but the boat itself is a ship. So I know that's a huge argument. Not that anybody really thinks about it, because I've noticed that on Monsters of Rock, it's a boat.
Yes, we all call it the boat, and we definitely break.
It's a ship.
We definitely break every rule on the boat as well. So,
even calling it a boat.
Yes, exactly. So, I know we've been living in a very different world since we talked about the first Spirits of Fire album. So I can't believe it's been 3 years, right?
Yeah, no, time flew by. I mean, I think pretty much 2020 kind of, I wouldn't even say flew by. I think it just kind of went by.
Right.
One of these things where we all kind of just shut our eyes and let it pass by. And then, you know, 2021 came by and that definitely flew by because everybody was, you know, getting back to getting into life again. And I think that we, in the process of that, we were just so overwhelmed by, you know, getting back to being, you know, what we had been before then. So it's like time kind of definitely flew by, but yeah, it's been 3 years.
So tell me about how the band's evolved since the first album. You've obviously changed singers. How did you decide on Ripper's replacement?
Well, the funny thing about that is I had absolutely no idea that Ripper wasn't going to do the record when I had said yes about doing a second record. Frontiers had contacted me and said, do you want to do another album? I said, yeah. And we, you know, went over exactly what they wanted to put into it. And, you know, there were certain things that had happened. I think they were hoping that the first one was a little bit more successful. And I think you, as an artist, you might have hoped so too. But I also thought, in my own personal opinion, that the first record could have been a little bit better. Not that it was a bad record. I just thought that, you know, some of that to me kind of missed the mark a little bit. So I think when they asked me if I wanted to do another one, there was a part of me that was like, yeah, you know why? Because I didn't want to just have that one record come out and be this thing I did as a side project thing that disappeared and was never really anything anybody, you know, celebrated or talked about or put on their list of metal records that they like. I mean, when, you know, it's 30 years later now, people still discuss the Dr. Butcher record. And I knew that first Spirits of Fire record was not going to be something that was going to be getting into that kind of a discussion. It was a good record, but, you know, I just think it missed the mark on a few things. So I was like, yeah, I want to do the album. And then it came to me, I think it was about a week later, and said, well, we have news for you. We're not going to be working with Ripper on this. Will you still do the record? Which was funny to me because when they first approached me to do Spirits of Fire, one of the main reasons why I did it was because Ripper was one of my really good friends, and I was really excited about doing something with him. So it was like it went from, here's the reason why you're doing this, to, do you still want to do it? And, you know, at that point in time, I just said, you know, I do want to do it because for me, you know, I was doing my solo records. I wasn't doing Sabotage. I hadn't done something like Metallium where I was, you know, a part of a metal project in a while. So I'm like, this could be, you know, I could maybe turn this into something like a Dr. Butcher where I could go and do a, you know, a real heavy metal record every couple of years and just have fun. And it took a lot of pressure off of me anyway because I didn't have to sing and I could just play guitar. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, I want to do it. And that's when we started discussing who do you want to use. And they had a list, and I had a list of some people, and, you know, my list had actually, I think, included a few people that may have been a little bit heavier than the typical know, Frontiers wanted, I think somebody was a little more melodic than the guys that I'd had Mark from Accept was on my list, and he actually had gotten an okay from Accept to do that if it was going to happen. And I've known him since I was like 16, so he's one of my favorite singers, one of my favorite people. So he was somebody that I had considered, and you know, I threw around the idea to them, you know, maybe we could contact Blitz, or, you know, even at that point in time, I said, well, what about, you know, Mike Howe? And I even talked to Mike about it. So it was like those kinds of people were on my list because I was thinking a little more metal. And they originally had hooked me up with Todd Hall, who is a metal singer, but he's a very clean metal singer. You know, the Riot stuff with him is very melodic, and his voice is very melodic. And me and Todd actually started doing some writing, and he was very good. I mean, I liked what we did. At the time, he was doing the voice, and he really couldn't commit to say anything about doing Spirits of Fire. And so we were kind of hush-hush about it. And then I think later in the middle of that summer, I think he might have had, I think his brother might have passed or something happened like that, and he was doing his solo record, and I think he just came to me, and he was a real gentleman about it, and he just said, you know, Chris, I don't think I could give you what you need for this band, and I don't want to, you know, lead you on and disappoint you, and it was great that he did that. He said, like, you don't want to leave me, you don't want to leave me hanging, and I was like, it was, you know, and the way he did it was very sweet and very, very gentlemanlike, but we did kind of get left hung at the time, but it was okay, you know, because we didn't really make any announcements, and with the world being shut down at that point, I knew we had some time. So Frontiers was already planning on me working with Aldo, and they said, well, how about you try Fabio? And I'm like, oh, we're starting to sound like a pizza place, but that's fine with me. It's like, you know, I like it, you know, I like Italian people. It's an Italian label. Let's just go with the Italian restaurant vibe. It was fine for me. I said, well, let's hear it. And of course, when you have DiGiorgio, I was like, this is really starting. It's like a frozen food section, but it was fun. We were talking about it, and it was like, well, let's, no matter who we use, let's make sure that they sound good. You know, that's all we wanted. That's all Mark and Steve and I said is like, well, can we just hear something? You know what I'm saying? And Aldo and they got some scratch stuff down. I was like, okay, I guess this is going to work. And, you know, they flew Fabio into work on, actually, I didn't even think he had to fly because he did his vocals in Italy with our producer Aldo, and you know, it just was working well. And for me, the good thing about this COVID thing was we had some extra time. So the first Spirits of Fire record, I recorded all my guitars, basically my final guitars, to a click track before I had Mark Zonder's drums. On this record, I said, look, I don't like doing things like that. I don't do my solo records like that. And I always had drums to record my solo records too. And I had Jeff cut his basic tracks, and I had, you know, Macaluso cut his tracks, and I had on my last records when I had Tishy do them, he did his drums, and then, you know, he did those to demo guitars, and I would do my guitars to those. And with this, I wanted to do that. So I was getting Mark's drums, and sometimes it would be one song a week. You know, it was coming very sporadically, and which was perfect for me because I was able to sit there and go, okay, so now I'm doing this song. And I would practice to his drums before I recorded my guitars. And I have six tracks of rhythms on all these songs. There's three guitars on each side, left and right, with three different guitars, six different tracks. And to get those really locked in, I needed to, you know, tighten them up. But I was also playing along with his fills and things and kind of rewrote my rhythms to match the drums. And I think it sounded more like a band that had rehearsed and played together, I think, which was kind of missing from the first record a little bit too. And then Steve got a hold of these tracks of me and Mark to do his bass on, and his bass is so awesome on this record. It just, I think it filled out as a really solid, you know, rhythm section underneath everything. And then the vocals got done, and I started hearing the vocals after the music was done, and it was just kind of like me hearing the record for the first time. And I was like, wow, he's really doing a great job at being a heavy metal singer, which is, I think, what we were all, you know, wanting, and we had not really heard the final product. And I would play these finished songs to a lot of people like you and other press people and friends of mine that had heard thousands of, you know, hundreds at least, you know, maybe thousands of singers. Mm-hmm. And I said, can you guess who this is? And nobody did.
Yeah.
Not one person guessed this was Fabio. And I credit that in a huge way to his, you know, going in there and taking the role of being a heavy metal singer. And I think he did a brilliant job at it. And I like this record a lot. I mean, I'm a fan of this album, which I wanted to be more of, I think, of the first one. I like the first record, but this one I listen to all the time. I'm really, really happy with it. To me, I just think it's a real fun listen. And I've had a few of the people I've spoken to that said that they think this is going to go down as one of their, you know, favorite metal records in their collection. And I'm like, okay, this is what I wanted. I wanted people to put this in with, you know, the records that they had from the past and think it was a great piece of art, because at the end of the day, that's what our music is. It's art. And, you know, I wanted to create something like that with this. And I put a lot of effort into writing the music on this with that specifically in mind. Like, I want to make sure people like this record. It wasn't, like I said, that the first one sucked, but I just wanted to make sure that people really listen to this one and said, wow, this is a cool record. And that's pretty much what we've been getting. And I also, with this one, I didn't want to write the lyrics and the melodies, because then to me it was feeling too much like I was just getting somebody to sing my solo record.
Okay.
So, you know, with this, Fabio did most of the lyric and melody writing. I mean, I had the first Spears of Fire record, the first four songs out of the gate, I wrote those completely, pretty much. Three mm-hmm. of them, 100%. You know, so I didn't want that with this. I wanted it to be a little bit less me and a little bit of everybody. So it got into that way on this, and I really like that. I co-wrote one song musically with Joel, and I Hoekstra, and I co-wrote one with my friend Lonnie Park, who I mean, I've known for over 30 years. He plays keyboards with John West and a lot of my other friends, and he's just a great musician. And I went to him specifically asking if he could write me something exactly like he did, which was the piano stuff in the last song on the record, the Out in the Rain song, because I, you know, I could play piano, but I can't really write it. And I wanted him to work on something with me. And the funny thing about that is, me and him finished that song, and he had different lyrics and melodies for the verses, and I wrote the counterpoint part in the middle. And I thought I sent that demo with all the vocals on it to Aldo, and I never did. So when I heard the version of the song that everybody hears now, I heard Fabio's vocals, and I'm like, wow, this is completely different, which was great because he did a great melody, and I really liked what he did. But the middle part of the song was not there, the vocals. It was just a dead space. And I was like, well, okay, this is, sounds really good, but where's that other section? And they're like, what other section? So they had no idea they were there. And Fabio couldn't record any more vocals at that point in time, and we needed to get the record mix finished. So I went in my studio and sang those counterpoint vocal parts, because I was the only one who knew the parts or the melodies. So
okay.
I had done that, but it was just really funny because I didn't know that they didn't hear our original version of the song, which I thought was kind of funny.
I was going to ask you if you had any challenges around collaborating through the pandemic, but I guess with everybody being in different locations anyways, it's probably always that kind of a challenge.
Yeah, you know what? We did the first record that way. None of us were together until we shot the videos for the first mm-hmm. record, you know, so in that way, that was pretty much exactly the same. But on this one, I think it worked into our advantage because everybody had extra time. It wasn't like,
right.
you know, Steve was on the road or Mark was busy or I was doing, everybody was home, and we were all able to attack this in a different way. And I think that's the one thing where I always say to everybody that I think the pandemic played to our advantage. And I think that helped with a lot of records. I mean, I've listened to so many metal records that have come out of my friends' bands and other bands throughout this last 2 years. And some of this music, I think, is some of the best music that these people released in decades. You know, not that mm-hmm. their records, like I said, were bad, like the first Spirits of Rock Fire record, I don't think it was bad, but I think that there was just, there was something to the ability to put that extra time into the music. I think that really helped the creations that came out of that. And that's something that, you know, just shows a lot of how much everybody loves what they do. You know, they were able to put out those pieces of music and use the pandemic creatively, because there was really nothing we could do other than wait. I mean, there was times when, you know, who knew what was going to happen in 2020? Right, right. We didn't know if we were ever going to get back on a road again. I mean, it's, the whole world died. It's like nobody knew what was going on. So it's like, what do? It's just write some music and hope for the best. And that's pretty much all you could do.
Yeah, I know that, you know, Testament's tried a couple times now to get that tour on the road. And I was curious to see with, you know, all the challenges around planning, touring, and even just festivals, do you think that Spirits of Fire will be able to get out and do some shows?
Well, my thing with that is because people are still delaying, like I just saw that Wasp moved shows to 2023. And I okay. mean, we just still see it happening. This band is not in the same place, and we don't have the ability just to go and rehearse. So if we were to set up shows, we would have to arrange a lot. We'd have to arrange the shows, the merch, the tour, the crew, everything, and get everybody in the one spot and go. And for something that's never played and everybody being in different locations, all that takes setup costs even before you get to where you're rehearsing.
Right.
So I think that as much as I'd like to say, hey, let's book a, you know, 3 weeks in South America, or let's do a week in Eastern Europe or whatever, it's like you just don't know what you're going to be able to do or not be able to do right now for sure. You could book it, but it might not stay booked.
Sure.
So,
sure.
And to reschedule something with us having, you know, alternate schedules would be difficult. It's not like you're just taking, you know, a tour from Iron Maiden and moving everybody in Iron Maiden 6 months. You know, you'd be moving everybody that has other things that are being rearranged too. So you got to dance around all of that. And I think it's probably just best to wait. You know, I think it would be fun to debut the thing maybe on something like a 70,000 tons of metal. I think that would be
sure.
a really fun place to have us go out and play. And this way with those two, type of situations, you can actually be somewhere for a couple days together too and rehearse. I mean, we could get into the ship, boat, whatever it is, and find a room and rehearse.
Yeah,
without having it to be something outside of that, or you get outside of the port or something and rehearse for a couple days and hop on there and you're ready. So I think something like that would create the situation that would be good, because obviously if the ship boat doesn't go anywhere, it's not something that's on our back too. So it just kinda,
right.
something that it creates a situation that you can follow and travel along with, and it's a little bit easier that way, I think. So we'll see. But I mean, I think now, I was even talking to Fabio the other day, and we're just watching the way people are reacting. I mean, the second video has like 206,000 views in a month, and
nice.
The most views we had of any single video 3 years ago was 145,000, I think. So we're noticing that something's happening with this in the metal world that's gone viral with the fans, which is something that's cool. It's exciting. And the thing that's exciting to me is I think the strongest material the fans haven't heard yet. I think the stuff that hasn't been released yet on the record is stronger. I mean, sometimes you put your singles out and that's your lead tracks and that's the best you got. And that's definitely not the case with this record.
Hmm. So with the album coming out this week, are you doing anything special for your fans with the, you know, the initial push of the album? I know sometimes you're doing special packages and signing things.
Yeah, I got some cool little Spirits of Fire picks made, and I got CDs in, and I'm doing personally autographed ones through my website. I think actually, though, I only have, as of when we started talking, I only have 7 of those left at the moment. So to sell, I mean, that stuff sold pretty quickly. It usually does. There's really, really awesome LPs that are like a double LP, and it's kind of like an orange fire burnt looking vinyl. But that's right now is just in the Frontier store. So, you know, the last record I was able to get a hold of some vinyl because they had some left and I'd sold that. But I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing that this time because it's it was fun to do that once. But vinyl's tremendously involved to sell. It's like, it's not the most fun one. CD, you open it up, you sign it, you stick it in the little envelope, you pull the tape off and you close. The vinyl one's like, you got these cardboard things that you got to fold out, figure out how to close it. Then it's like different postage. And it's just the process of dealing with vinyl is nowhere near as fun, and it takes longer, and I don't want to charge people like $100 an LP, but to me it's a pain in the ass. So I'm like, if I'm gonna do this, you guys are gonna be paying out of your ass, and I don't want to do that to people. So I have to think about it. You know, I might take some vinyl here to sell, but I as of now I'm just stopping with the CDs. I'd probably order some more CDs before I would order some vinyl from Frontiers, and you know, hopefully they will dump the ones they have anyway. Sure. So that in a perfect world they will all sell and I won't even have that option. I mean, that's something that would actually make me happy. Not that I, you know, would mind having the vinyl here, but for those reasons, like I said, it wound up being a lot more difficult than I thought just in the whole process of getting vinyl out the door. It was fun, and they're big and they're cool looking, but it's like, this is a pain in the ass.
Well, you know, the guitar picks alone might be a hot commodity. One of my daughter's biggest complaints about the TSO show this year was that she didn't get any guitar picks from you. So
yeah, we actually consciously had decided at I think it was kind of a couple shows into the tour that we weren't going to give anything off. Not only were the signing lines and the autograph things postponed this year, but we decided not to to throw anything off the stage. And that, I mean, a lot of that too, it's like, you know, people might have interacted trying to get it. One could pick it up. They could have grabbed it on some spit on the floor or something. Like, it was just the whole concept of the fact being it was safer just to if you close out the X factors that might make things happen, it just becomes a little bit better. And our main concern was the safety of everybody in the audience and the band, the crew and everything, and the venues, people that work there, everyone. So we just decided in an early stage that we were going to not have anything leave the stage.
Sure. And just getting through that tour alone with so many people in the ensemble and, you know, the size of the venues you guys play, it's a blessing that you made it through the whole tour. So
yeah, you're happy for that. Everybody set up with a goal when we started it, and you know, our management and the people there and everybody said, this is what we're going to need you to do. And you know, the Anil family, we wanted to step up and make sure that we represented and got, you know, Paul's music out there and got TSO to be a part of everybody's, you know, holiday season. And it was pretty, you know, it was pretty obvious around us that if we screwed up, it was going to stop. I mean, NHL stopped the whole league in the middle of our tour, and Evanescence and Hailstorm shut down in the same venues we were either just played or just about to play, you know? So it was like, we're watching things that were going down, and, you know, like Al Petrelli said, we kind of felt like, you know, we'd landed on Normandy Beach with a bunch of water pistols. You didn't really know what you were up against. And it was a fight for us to just stay on focus. It's hard because you can't see it. It's hard to defend against something that you can't see. So to always imagine and keep in your head and keep focused that's there. And we had an overall goal, and everybody rose up, and I'm really proud of everybody involved on the entire, you know, East Coast, West Coast crews and tours and musicians and everybody. But I mean, you look at TSO, I mean, if that goes down, it's not just like five guys in a tour bus with a couple crew members. I mean, this is, you know, 40 tractor trailers of lights and sound and laser and pyro and video and you know, moving stages and animation and then you have the merch and the hotels and the crew people and the buses and the trucks and the venues themselves and the venue workers, and all that just adds up and adds up and adds up. And all those people were relying on us to get through it. And it was a challenge, but it was something that I think everybody should be really proud of. We made it through, and that very last show when we were loading up and heading out of the venue in Cleveland, we were just like, wow, we made it.
It was pretty
interesting, because a lot of things didn't. We lost a lot of tours, you know, shut down or at least go on the side, and we couldn't stop. You can't postpone Christmas. You know,
right.
It's like we needed to finish.
Yeah.
So it was different for us.
So I've got a final question for you. You know, after the Spirits of Fire release, what else do you have coming up this year? Anything else to look forward to?
Well, I mean, I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to write my solo record now that this is done. And I actually think, oddly enough, I want to start writing some more Spirits of Fire music, because I want to have some stuff put aside, because, you know, this was a lot of fun to make this one, and I'd love to make another one, and I'm hoping everybody else does too. So if this is successful enough, I'm hoping that we get, you know, asked to do Spirits of Fire 3. And I actually want to animate the fire guy, who I haven't named yet. I don't know if I should call him Ship or Boat. I haven't figured it out. But I'm going to think of the guy's name and animate him and put him in a video for one of the more straight, you know, the heavier metal songs. There's a song called My Confession, and there's a song called House of Pain on this record. One of those two, I think, would be really good to animate him and get him alive. And that was the main reason why I kind of picked him for the first record cover anyway. I wanted to have our Eddie, but I have to, I have to name him. And I think that, you know, the kids would enjoy that. It just makes it a little bit more fun for me. I mean, Spirits of Fire is my, in a lot of ways, like I said, my Dr. Butcher now. And for me, it gives me that channel. And then when I could go do my solo records, and I know what I'm focusing on for that. I don't really need to put as much of the heavy stuff on my albums, and I can have a little more fun, creative, and maybe actually put some instrumentals on it. I never do, you know, with my guitar stuff. But we'll see. That was fun for me to have the Spirits record too, to really, I focused a little more on lead guitars, but we'll see what happens. Yeah. I had some friends of mine ask me if I could do tours for them, because they had members of their bands that, you know, weren't matching up with protocols and things like that. So I had opportunities. I mean, some of them, you know, luckily some situations got straightened out where they could. So there might be something here and there that pops up that I'd be doing that nobody even knows of yet. But as of right now, I'm just planning on getting through till, you know, next November when we head out for TSO again. I know that tour is already, you know, being booked and set up, and that starts very early. So we'll be looking forward to getting back out for that tour again. And I'm gonna blink my eyes and it'll be October.
Yeah, for sure.
I know that. I mean, right now it's, you know, mid-February. I'll blink my eyes and it'll be summer, then I'll blink my eyes and it'll be October.
Well, thanks so much for catching up with us today, Chris. It's always great to chat with you, and very excited about seeing what happens with this album once it's officially released.
Yeah, me too. I just think that, I hope that the metal fans and kids that like our music and like all kinds of, you know, metal will hear it and be like, wow, you know, this is a pretty cool record. I mean, you know, sometimes people try to overanalyze music, but for the most part, I think the reaction to this has been really strong. You're never going to make everybody happy, but I think it's a fun listen, and I hope everybody enjoys it.